Curtain Up presents The Stars and Their Choices. Boris Karloff in Hanging Judge, a play by Raymond Massey based on a novel by Bruce Hamilton. Hanging Judge.
Members of the jury, are you agreed upon your verdict?
We are.
Do you find the prisoner, Harry Gosling, guilty or not guilty?
Guilty. But we ask that the prisoner should be recommended to mercy on the ground that the murder was not premeditated.
Harry Gosling, you stand convicted of murder. Have you anything to say why a sentence of death should not be pronounced upon you according to law?
I'm not guilty. Not guilty.
Harry Gosling, you have been convicted of a foul and brutal murder. The defense which you concocted has been demonstrated to the satisfaction of the jury to be untrue. You must now prepare yourself to undergo the penalty which the law enacts for such a crime as you have committed. The recommendation which the jury have added to their verdict will be forwarded to the proper quarters, where it will receive due consideration. My duty is now to pass upon you the sentence of the law. That sentence is that you be taken hence to a lawful prison, and thence to a place of execution.
Why the hell don't the governor come? He said 8 o'clock.
He'll come. Take it easy, Harry.
There he is now.
The governor.
Okay.
Well, Gosling, I brought Mr. Nottingham along. He's come straight from the Home Secretary.
I'm sorry, old man.
You mean there's no reprieve, sir?
I'm afraid not. Now, you remember, I warned you not to be too hopeful.
Yes, but I couldn't carry it that far. You're pulling my leg, aren't you, Mr. Nottingham?
I wish from my heart I was. But I'm afraid I can't hold out any hope now, Harry. You've got to try to be brave.
It ain't fair. I'm innocent. I never killed her. You know I told the truth, sir. And so did that swine of a judge, shaking himself on the bench. He knew I wasn't guilty. He told him to say I was, just for the kick of it. He's the real murderer, curse him. Oh, God. I hope somebody makes him pay for this, the cold devil. I hope he pays.
Mr. Justice Britton.
Sir Francis Britton is not at home.
Will he be in later this evening?
I'm afraid he's out, sir. And tomorrow he's going away. If you want to see him, you'll have to wait till after the vacation, the second week in January.
Well, my business won't wait. I must see him tonight. Where can I find him?
I'm afraid I'm not at liberty to tell you that.
I think you'd better. On his account more than on my own.
I tell you I'm not at liberty. Anyway, he's at his club and you wouldn't be able to see him there.
The adept.
Thank you. How did you know that? Well, anyway, he won't see you.
He'll see me, all right. Oh, yes. He'll see me.
Good evening, Judd. Yes.
Good evening, Lamprey.
What a day it's been. I took a bit of a breather and I went down to Sandwich and played in a monthly medal at St. George's.
How did you do?
I won it, by Jove. With a rollicking 78 and a gale of wind. Anything in the papers, Sir Francis? Oh, good Lord, they've hanged that poor fellow Gosling. I thought he'd get a reprieve. I'm sorry.
It's quite all right, Lamprey.
Good evening, Lamprey.
Hello, Sidney.
Good evening, Judge.
Evening, Sidney.
Buy me a drink, Lamprey. That ruddy market took another turn today.
How's your Midland Steel?
Oh, we're still alive. No thanks to you lawyers.
Here's Robert. What do you have, Sidney? You've got to help me to celebrate.
I'm going to buy you a good dinner, too, you old pauper.
What? Oh, very well. I'll have my usual, then. A large martini, Roberts, sir. No vegetables in it.
No, Sir George.
Judge? No, thank you, Lamprey.
Whiskey and soda, Roberts.
Very good, sir.
What are you celebrating, Lamprey? A hanging?
Sydney.
This club is composed of all the murdering professions. Lawyers, doctors and actors. The latter are the most ingenious. They do it by boredom.
And how do you industrialists accomplish a lethal project?
Suicide, I should think. Oh, what the hell are you so pleased about, Lamprey?
I won the monthly medal at St. George's with a 78. Blowing like sin, too.
What did you do at the Maiden?
Well, I got my 4. But I had to get out of that hollow with a sandblaster.
A sandblaster is an illegal club that should not be used in tournament play. The rules of the Royal and Ancient are quite explicit on that point.
Really, Judge?
Roberts.
Sir?
I shall be dining later.
Well, I'm damned. Oh, it's impossible. What does that desiccated, pompous old bore know about golf?
As a matter of fact, he's pretty good. I'd like to take a sandblaster to him.
A large martini and a whiskey, sir.
Stout fellow, Roberts. Cheers, Lemper.
Cheers.
I say, old Britain doesn't mind advertising himself. He's left this paper open at a report of his oration at the carpenter's dinner last night. Just take a look.
Evening.
Evening. I know you. It's Colonel Archer. I met you when we were handling that smuggling case in Hong Kong 4 years ago.
Oh, yes, of course. Yes. You're.
I'm George Sidney. Jolly good to see you, old chap. This is Miles Lamprey. A thieving lawyer, I'm afraid.
How do you do?
Archer's Commissioner of Police in Hong Kong, Lamprey.
Well, I was. I retired last year. No, I'm jolly glad to see you, Sidney. I've been wandering round looking for a face I knew. Our club, the Greville, has been housed by you for summer cleaning.
Well, you came in without a guide. Stout fella. Have a drink. Lamprey here will buy it. He's just hung a chap.
Not me. I had nothing to do with it.
And won some perishing medal. And he's filthy rich.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you very much. I have to dine in Belgrave Square in 20 minutes,
but... Oh, come along, Lamprey. Can't all those fat briefs buy a few drinks? Roberts, another double martini. Archer, my boy, you should avail yourself of one of Lamprey's rare moments of hospitality.
Well, whiskey and soda, thank you.
Same for me, Roberts, please.
Yes, sir. You don't know when Sir Francis will be returning, do you, sir?
No. Why?
Only that a person has called and wishes to see him, sir. 2 whiskies and a martini.
He can have the old goat as far as I'm concerned.
Who are you talking about?
Sir Francis Britton, the High Court judge. He tried the Midland Steel case,
right? Yes, damn his eyes.
What did that decision mean to Midlands, didn't it?
Well, I wouldn't give Britton the satisfaction of thinking that he'd hit us very hard. He hasn't as yet. But it could set the development of the steel industry of this country back 20 years. And I'll never forgive him for that. For I firmly believe that it was a venomous decision. We'll win our appeal. Oh, damn it, don't make me talk about that. Oh, that's jolly quick, Roberts.
Phaeton had anticipated your wishes, Sir George.
Oh, happy for Joe. Oh, cheers, Lamprey, and here's to you, Archer.
Cheers.
How long will you be home?
Well, I'm home for good. I've just been appointed chief of the Norfolk Constabulary, which is a comfortable progression from the Far East.
Hello, Nottingham.
Oh, how are you, Nottingham?
I'm feeling pretty grim, thank you.
Archer, this must be a unique occasion. A lawyer feels grim.
Oh, damn it, Sidney, don't try to be funny.
Nottingham, I'm your friend. This club is filled with lawyers, as is my less exclusive alternative, the House of Commons. I know too many lawyers. You alone are tolerable. You have a heart, my friend.
Don't listen to him, Nottingham.
Oh, Nottingham, this is my friend Colonel Archer. Oh. This is an amiable and honest barrister, Keith Nottingham.
How do you do?
How do you do?
By Jove, I'm sorry, but I'm already late for dinner. I must dash along. Well, Sidney, look, here's my card. There's excellent golf at Hunt Stanton near my home. What do you say to a round one day soon?
Oh, fine idea. It's good to have you back home, old chap.
Good night, Sidney. Good night, Nottingham.
Good night.
Good night, Archer.
Good night,
Lamprey, old boy. You know, the sort you die of a surfeit of.
Good night.
That's a splendid chip.
Yes, I agree. Oh, hand me that paper, Sidney. Roberts, whiskey and soda, please.
The same, Robert.
Another large martini, Roberts.
Yes, sir.
Well, Britton was on his hobby horse again last night, I see. Listen to this. I will say, categorically, that within the memory of any living man, no person in this country has suffered the extreme penalty of the law without having richly deserved that fate.
Damn his soul. He could say that when young Harry Gosling was a few hours away from the gallows.
Sorry, Nottingham, I know how you feel about this case. For that matter, every case you take on. You make the best fight that could be made for him. You couldn't have done more.
This was the wrong verdict, Lamprey, and I wouldn't say that if I didn't feel it deeply. Britton was trying me, not Gosling. He hates me. I believe any counsel he didn't dislike might have won.
Oh, come, Nottingham, old boy. You're not the only brief snatcher Britton's headed in for. In the Midland Steel case, I...
Didn't it? I read old Britton's summing up. They're always pretty clear and defined.
Oh, clear, yes.
It seemed to me that you've been batting on a sticky wicket, old chap.
I wasn't, by heaven. If ever there was a reasonable doubt to work for, I had it. Oh, God, I had it. Here's a case of an hysterical girl, baby on the way. She's trying to get him to marry her. He can't. He's no money. She stabs herself. He's watching. He's seen it. He's faced with that awful fact, the dead body. What can he do? He panics. He dumps it in the canal, poor youngster. We all know what panic is, but not Britton. He worked harder on that point than the Crown. He played it as if he were pleading. And he allowed the boy's past record to be in on the damnedest technicality. I argued those points with everything I had at the appeal and for 2 hours last night at the Home Office. West was hog-tied by advice from the bench. Britton wanted a conviction, and he got it, and he made it stick.
Oh, Lord Nottingham, I know how badly you feel, but you must admit old Britton knows his law, and he's pretty thorough. I believe he lives for the law. There's nothing else he cares about.
Damnation, how can you be a good lawyer without one spark of human kindness? Lamprey, I saw Gosling last night, a few hours away from the rope. You didn't, and I just failed at the Home Office. Well, he's out of it now.
Emotion and the law. A painful combination. Here's to you, Nottingham, old man. You're a stout fellow.
Oh, hell, I'll give you a toast. To confusion on the bench. As if there wasn't plenty of it now.
That was an interesting toast, Sidney. Oh. I assume you drank it alone?
No. I drank to it also, Judge. I was thinking of the late Harry Gosling.
That remark does you no credit, Nottingham, neither as to your manners nor as to your conduct as a barrister. Were it not that this is a gentleman's club, I would report you to the benches of your inn. But I make allowances for what may perhaps be termed excess of zeal. I will be pleased to forget this incident.
Sir Francis, you and I both follow the profession of the law. We have that in common. But we have little else. I do not believe that ours or any criminal law can be an unfailing pilot of justice. Mortal laws are administered by mortal men. Neither is infallible. Till the day I die, I cannot and will not leave my heart in the robing room.
Very aptly phrased, Nottingham. I confess I've never seen you enter a courtroom unequipped with that somewhat unpredictable organ. But I have not at any time claimed that the criminal law is an infallible instrument. But this I will claim, that in this country it approaches as near perfection as is humanly possible. And further, I believe that such perfection increases in direct proportion to the gravity of the issue judged. In cases of less than first importance, there may at times be excessive or even undeserved punishment. But in a capital charge, such a lapse leading to a miscarriage of justice is absolutely impossible.
Oh, I pray to God that never again will I plead a case before you. Excuse me, Sidney.
I know now why that damned statue has a bandage on. Well, I've got to go and make some more laws for you fellows to argue about. Good night, Lamprey. Put your medal under your pillow and make a wish.
Good night, Sidney.
Good night, Judge.
Good night.
Are you dining, Judge?
Yes. We could split a bottle of Montrachet.
Capital. Excuse me, Sir Francis. There's a man waiting to see you.
Oh. Didn't he give his name?
No, sir. I'll go in and keep the tables.
I'll join you, Lamprey. Well, send him packing, Roberts. I'll not be...
Sir Francis Britton, my name is Teal. T-E-A-L.
Very good, Roberts. I will deal with this man.
Yes, sir.
What does this intrusion mean? I've never seen you before in my life.
No, of course you haven't. I've seen you, though. I saw you yesterday in your court.
Yes, yes, yes. A great many people visit the court, sir. I think I must ask you to go.
Oh, no, Sir Francis. You can't do that to me. I've a lot to say to you. Don't you remember the name of Teal? That's my name.
And this ring. Do you remember that?
Your name is Teal?
Yes, it is. Quite a comfortable room, this, isn't it?
This is quite impossible. I must ask you to go.
I understand. Someone may come in. It's not good that I should be seen with you in your club, is it? Much better, I think, if I came to Moxton, Mr. Bainbridge.
What's that? How the devil did you know that?
That's quite a little story. But it would be better to talk to you there rather than here, wouldn't it?
As you seem to know the whereabouts of my house in Norfolk, and my incognito, heaven knows how, you'd better come there. I suggest Friday, the day after tomorrow, at 9 o'clock in the evening. It will not be to your interest to divulge my private address or my other identity, which I use for reasons of privacy. Now, please be off.
Thank you, Sir Francis. I knew you'd see me, but it was better to come here first, wasn't it? On Friday, then, at 9 o'clock.
Where did you walk to this afternoon, dear?
Over the marshes to the old mill and back.
It's a perfect, lonely walk. Not a soul to be seen.
You just can't abide people, can you, my dear?
Oh, I come to Moxton for peace and quiet, Mary, and I will have what I want.
So you shall, my dear. There's your coffee.
Thank you, Mary. Mary, mm-hmm. Has your father made any further objection to your working here?
Oh, he doesn't think much of it, but that doesn't matter. I'm grown up and I like working here. That is, when you're here, Dux. Then it's fun. Besides, Dad likes the money I earn. You're quite generous, Mr. Bainbridge.
You've been a good girl and not talked to your father or anyone else about us?
What a worrier. Heavens no, why should I? I don't talk. Not about that sort of thing. That's my business. No, dearie, Dad won't give any trouble. And I'm going to give you a lovely holiday.
Ah, Mary. Get yourself a glass for some port.
Thank you, Dux. I don't mind if I do.
Ah, the peace of this place. Thank God for it. And for you, my sweet. How nicely you've kept everything. Is that the old silver tankard I got in Sutton Thorpe?
You said you wanted a shiny prize. I cleaned it up for
you. It's lovely. It's a good one.
I've had plenty of time to work on it. Oh, it does get lonely here, dearie. Nearly 8 weeks since you were here last.
Oh.
You must have been teaching those boys an awful lot in wherever you live.
Mary.
Oh, I don't mind where you live as long as you come back. More often, though, I should like. What's this, Freddy? A sort of paper.
Leave it alone, Mary. It's a headache powder, and I shall probably want it. I've a migraine coming on, I'm afraid.
I've never seen you take these before. Oh, I'm sorry you've got a headache.
No, you must be going, my dear. It's nearly 9 o'clock.
Why? Have you got to work tonight? You never do down here.
Now, I've told you not to be inquisitive when I asked you to do anything. I want you to go home early tonight because I have to do some work. Now, that's all that I can tell you.
Well, I think you might have finished your rotten old work before you came down to see me. You know what I think. I think you've got a lot of girls to teach, not boys at all. Otherwise, you wouldn't send me away like this.
What a ridiculous little monkey it is. Now, run along.
Freddy, my sweet, I think I could scare that work right away.
Oh, you must go, my love. I'll tell you the truth. It isn't work, not exactly. There's a man coming here tonight, and I must see him alone. It's a confidential matter. Just a poor fellow who's out of work, and I want to help him. But tomorrow, everything will be all right, and our holiday will begin then. Now, won't you be a good girl and understand?
Well, there's a new one. Nobody ever comes here. I don't think some poor tramp who's out of work should come before
me. Well, I couldn't arrange it any other way. Oh, confound it. This migraine is really coming on. Oh, get me a glass of brandy, Mary.
All right.
Glad I had that powder. It's the last one, too. Don't tell anyone about this man who's coming here tonight. I don't want anyone to know that I can be visited here. I want to be alone.
with you.
Worry killed a cow. Here's your brandy, sweet. I hope you feel better soon. Careful, dearie, you're spilling the powder on the rug.
There he is now. Run along, Mary. I'll answer the door.
I'll see you in the morning then, my dear.
Go out the back way. There's a good girl.
All right. Good night.
Good evening. In here, please.
This is a lonely room. One chair, one glass of brandy. Just as you would have it. Just as I expected when I looked at it from the outside 3 months ago.
How dare you?
Oh, yes, last spring. I followed you here from your house in London. I know your habits well, Mr. Shall I call you Mr. Bainbridge?
You will address me as Sir Francis.
Your private life as Mr. Frederick Bainbridge is well guarded, isn't it? The innkeeper tells me I'm your first visitor.
You observed my instructions?
Oh, yes. It would have done me no good to betray your innocent privacy.
You will tell me at once what you are here for.
You've made two mistakes so far, Sir Francis. Bad ones. And I was quite sure you would. I counted on that. You didn't have me thrown out of your club. You invited me here to Moxton. Panic, wasn't it, Sir Francis? I wonder if the club steward heard me tell you my name.
Your name meant nothing to me.
It meant enough for you to bring about this meeting. The innkeeper here knows my name, too, and he'll expect me to return to the inn.
Teal, if that is your name, you will be wise to come to the point of your visit.
And then you chose to see me here alone. That's your second mistake.
You're sure that I am alone?
Oh, yes, quite sure. You've just sent your housekeeper, or whatever you call her, away, and there's no detective with a notebook hiding behind that door.
Why should I take such precautions?
Just for the reason that you have a heavy stick handy, and then, of course, there's your telephone.
Exactly.
May I sit down? My heart's not strong. Oh, no. Don't feel reassured, Sir Francis. It would be unfortunate if I died when, as you claim, you know so little about me.
These threatening remarks can point to only one thing, and I would warn you that...
The name of Teal hasn't a pleasant memory for you, has it? I haven't been out of your mind one moment for 3 days, have I?
I believe you to be an impostor. You've made some clumsy allusions to a friendship which I had for a certain Mabel Teal 30 years ago.
You remember this ring? The initials F.B. are engraved inside it. Francis Britton, Frederick Bainbridge. Strange that you should use the same alias all these years. Another mistake. But it was so long ago.
From what you know, or pretend to know, you expect some gain.
That would look very much like blackmail.
It does.
I'm right again.
And I would have you know that the law is terrible for the blackmailer, and it very properly protects the victim. I shall telephone for the police.
I shouldn't do that. There's no blackmail. I want from you exactly nothing. That confuses you, doesn't it?
What do you want? Who are you?
Panic again, Sir Francis. You don't like panic. You're very severe with those who suffer panic. When you hanged Gosling, you told the jury, panic can presuppose guilt as well as innocence. You see, I quote you accurately.
That is what I said.
Could an innocent man have disposed of the girl's body in such a brutish and callous manner? Oh, how you pounced on that.
It was the action of a guilty man.
A frightened boy, Mr. Justice. You don't believe that there can be suicides when murder is suggested?
It was a cowardly crime.
I hope I may hear those words again from you, Mr. Justice.
What do you mean?
Day after day I've sat in your court in the public gallery. 4 times in 6 months I've watched you send men to the rope.
You're quite mad, aren't you?
Huh? Perhaps. And you still think you can deal with that? The madman can be safe behind bars. Oh, but I'm cleverer than you, so don't use your telephone. You'll see there isn't time.
For God's sake, who are you?
Hanging judge gets his verdict. Just the facts and no emotion. The beautiful machine. You're not used to fear, Britton.
You've not felt fear for 30 years, but you did then, I know, because I have your letters. Squalid, fearful letters of a coward, written to Mabel Teal, my mother. Your mother. Take them. Read them, Britain. Read them. The Britain case will have its letters, too, and they'll be admissible and relevant. Read them. Read them carefully. Yes, I'm your son. Your son and Mabel Teal's.
I don't believe you. These letters are fake.
Don't bluff, Britain. Why have you waited all these years to...
My mother died a year ago. She kept her secret until the end. She was a fool.
Well, that's one you didn't write. You've never seen that one before. It was written to me 1 year ago by a foolish old woman almost your age. My mother. She hadn't had it fat and easy like you. She was sick and dying when... Not yet. Not yet. Please, God, not yet.
What is it, man? You're ill. What can I do? Here. Drink this brandy.
Oh, it's passing. Angina. I'm prepared for that. I shan't go that way. You can't get rid of me that easily. And it's no use trying to destroy those letters.
You're sick. Sick in mind and body.
Don't try kindness. It's no part of you. I know, for I'm just like you. Just as cold and just as ruthless. It's in the family, you see.
Why have you waited a year to see me?
I wasn't ready. I've been preparing my first and only case. The Britain case. And it's a good one. I'm prosecutor and judge. And you, Mr. Justice, are in the dock. You're indicted for the crime of being without a soul. For the crime of being unloved. For the crime of being without faith. Not even in your law. Have you ever had tears in your eyes? No. The only emotion you ever had was in the writing of those letters. Emotion? Panic. You've panicked before and you will again. I can give you that feeling you've always scorned, and I will.
Stop!
I hate you, Britain, because you're like me. Because you gave me life. I loathe you beyond man's belief.
Quick. What?
There's a capsule in my waistcoat pocket. Right. Give it to me. Put it in my mouth.
Here. Now drink the brandy.
Thank you. And you did it. That capsule. Poison. And you gave it to me. Damn you. That's murder. Now, what will you do? I wonder. Oh.
Teal. Stop laughing. Don't fool, man. I'll get a doctor.
Teal!
Dead. Dead.
Good morning, Sir George. Morning, Roberts. When Colonel Archer arrives, tell him I'm in the writing room, will you?
Very good, sir.
Morning, Sydney.
If it isn't Ronnie Bond. I didn't see you behind the paper. How's the old probate admiralty and divorce? Bust up any homes today?
No, trade's bad.
Oh, so you're having a nice, quiet time reading the murders, eh?
I am, as it happens. Did I hear you mention Colonel Archer? He'll be in this mess down in Norfolk, no doubt.
Huh? Which mess is that?
Don't you read the papers, old boy? They found Teal's body. The chap who disappeared from the pub in Moxton 3 weeks ago.
Oh, so now the fun begins. Where was it found?
In a disused well in the garden of a chap named Bainbridge.
Oh. What has Bainbridge to say about it?
Nothing. As this rag pertinently remarks, it will be recalled that when Teal was last seen at the inn, he expressed his intention of visiting Mr. Bainbridge. From this meeting, he never returned. Mr. Bainbridge is not at present in residence.
Uh-huh.
I suspect, of course, that this is a quite unauthorized announcement. And it's not difficult to see who's been speaking out of turn. Mr. Alfred Motley, the parish clerk of Moxton, gave our correspondent a vivid description of the finding of the body. I had noticed an unpleasant smell coming from Mr. Bainbridge's garden. This aroused my suspicions, and I communicated with Inspector Vincent of the Norfolk Constabulary, who was investigating Teal's disappearance. As a result of what I told him, Inspector Vincent descended into the well, and after some difficulty came up with Teal's body. It was in a ghastly condition, and had obviously been in the water several weeks.
Yes, rousing attractive, I should say.
The brickwork of the well is raised at least 2 feet above the ground, and I do not see how it would have been possible for Teal to fall in accidentally. Unfortunately, Mr. Bainbridge, who might be able to throw some light on the matter, is away. He is in the habit of paying regular visits to Moxton, but no one knows anything of his life outside. He is believed to be a schoolmaster in Lancashire. You ask your friend Archer what he thinks about that vivid description. Ah, Francis, I didn't know you were back in town.
Oh, I had some business brought me back, and the weather wasn't too good.
Morning, Sydney.
Good morning, Judge. If you'll excuse me, I've got a letter to write.
You're in Scotland, weren't you, Judge?
Yes, a walking trip, but the mist became intolerable.
Oh? My wife writes from Goldsby that the weather was fine.
That's the East Coast. I was in the West Highlands. You must have found the papers interesting this morning, Pond, with your predilection for detective stories. There seems to be a good involved case shaping up in Norfolk.
Yes, I should imagine that it'll turn out to be a murder. Probably motivated by a blackmail attempt.
No, I don't think so. I'd say from the heart weakness that the death was from natural causes.
There's no mention here of the dead man having had a weak heart. Where did you see that?
I seem to remember something to that effect. I must say...
Besides, in the best detective fiction, heart attacks are not timed by nature to occur conveniently on the parapets of wells. Mm. You're not at your ease when you're for the defence, Francis. Try the other side, where you're on familiar ground.
When is the inquest?
Huh? Oh, I don't know. It doesn't say in this paper. Oh, yes, Friday. I say, Kent are doing well. What are you going to do for the rest of the vacation? Back to Scotland?
Oh, I rather think I'll go abroad. Where was that place you enjoyed so much 2 years ago?
Oh, Saint-Yvette. Yes, it's delightful. Very quiet and free of English people.
This fellow Bainbridge, he seems to have acquired a substantial anonymity.
Bainbridge? Oh, you're back on the Moxton case. I thought crime bored you. Yes, it seems he was rather anxious to cover himself with mystery.
Or rather, he's had mystery thrust on him. I must say, I wouldn't know how to track him down if I were the police. Of course, they'd have nothing to hold him on if they did find him, would you say?
Lord, I don't know. There's no autopsy report on the body, no real information of any kind. I suspect that this whole announcement of yesterday is quite unauthorized.
I dare say. Oh, good Lord, I'll be on circuit in the autumn. Now, if there is a case against Bainbridge and they catch him, it's quite likely that I'll try the case. Oh, no. Norfolk, Eastern Circuit. I shall be in the Midland. Parkinson will have it, yes. Pity. It would have been most interesting. You know, I detest the blackmailer above all. I might be able to vary my impressive list of convictions with an acquittal, and the Bradenham papers might even print an acknowledgement of my dawning humanity.
And you don't read detective stories, Francis? I shall send you 2 or 3 good Thorndykes. What about some lunch? I'm rather peckish.
It's only a little after 12, rather early for lunch, but I'll come and watch you.
I'm sorry to make you lunch so early, Sidney, but I have to be back at Scotland Yard again at 2 o'clock.
Oh, suits me equally well. What'll you have, Archer? We don't have to eat just yet.
Well, dry sherry, thank you.
Strangely enough, I think I'll have a martini, Roberts.
With no vegetables, Sir George.
Wonderful fella.
By the way, I gave this club as my whereabouts during lunchtime, and I may be rung up. I hope you'll forgive me.
Oh, but of course. Archer, you're off to a tough start in your new job.
Yes, quite a difficult case. I called in Scotland Yard yesterday, but that doesn't mean I've given up the case.
I read the newspaper stuff. There's not much to go on.
That confounded statement about the body being found has obviously made our quarry run to ground.
Yes.
And got in the papers in spite of the police. But it's pretty clear that we have a murder on our hands, and I'm convinced that this missing fellow of Bainbridge is our man.
You fellows don't talk that way without reason.
More than meets the eye. At least this eye, is there?
Very much so.
One martini and a sherry, sir.
Oh, thanks, Robert.
Well, may you get your man.
Good health.
Cheers.
Well, tell me about this Bainbridge fellow.
Nobody knows much about him in the district. There was no trace of any other base or residence.
I gather he wasn't very sociable.
Definitely not, no. None of the gentry knew him personally, and only a few by sight. One or two tradesmen and the innkeeper were the only people who had any communication with him. He had a rather unsavory reputation as far as his servant was concerned. He wanted amorous acquiescence in addition to culinary skill.
100% efficiency, what? what was the cause of Teal's death?
Police surgeon reports that he definitely wasn't drowning. No water in the lungs, and the well was almost dry.
Bashed?
No, just superficial marks due to the drop. The well was about 25 feet deep. We're still waiting for the post-mortem report on the stomach.
Well, what did you find on the body?
Only one thing of consequence, but that's quite enough to make me want to find very much Mr. Bainbridge. As this case has gone to the CID, I suppose I shouldn't do this, but... Well, I'm going to show you this squalid little dossier on friend Bainbridge. These documents were found in a sort of secret pocket sewed up in Teal's coat under the left armpit. They were in an oilskin wallet, and with the exception of the outside ones, they were not too badly spoiled. Yes. Yes, they're copies, of course, photostat. The first one's a birth certificate. Notice the names?
Francis Mabel Teal. Frederick Bainbridge.
Uh-huh. And the date?
November 30th, 35 years ago.
About Teal's age, according to the doctor's best guess.
Yes, it looks as if the fellow was a relation of Bainbridge's. What's your Bainbridge's first name?
Frederick.
Uh-huh.
This letter is June, the year before.
Sweet puss, hip hip hooray. I shall be back by the weekend after all, so prepare a little super anteem and some extra kisses for your own Fredigans, who simply cannot contain his impatience.
This is worse than the channel crossing.
The next three are in the same style, but this one isn't so funny. I'll read it. Rather illegible. Dear Mabel, this is quite disastrous. Are you absolutely sure? There must be something you can do about it. If it costs money, I might scrape together 50. The point is, it must be stopped. Write soon and tell me you've arranged something. Much love, F.
Yes, that's not a pretty letter. What's the date?
About 7 months before the birth certificate.
Clear enough. Can I see the next?
This is a week later.
My dear Mabel, I'm shocked and surprised. I must repudiate all responsibility. And so on. I think you will agree it will be undesirable for us to meet again. Sincerely, F.B. Filthy swine.
The next is the spoiled one. I'll read it. It's in another hand and no year or address. How like a woman. My dearest boy, these letters, the only ones I ever received from your father, whom I knew as Frederick Bainbridge, will explain how you came to be born. Your father is elderly, successful, and childless. Now a lot of it's gone. Chance I found out from a newspaper photo who he really was. Now, therefore, a very important... Oh, this is maddening. Your loving mother, Mabel Teal.
I suppose there's no question of it being your Bainbridge.
Not the slightest. My inspector got the specimen of his handwriting, application for a gun license, exactly the same.
Yes, well, I can see why you want to find your elusive Mr. Bainbridge. What a swine.
Teal was making what might be called a collection, a shakedown, as the Americans say, I suppose.
Yes, obviously.
When did Bainbridge leave Moxton?
About a week ago, 8 days to be exact.
Was he ever questioned when Teal failed to show up at the inn?
Oh, Lord, yes, I questioned him myself. Living nearby, I went to see him with Inspector Vincent, whom I put on the disappearance of Teal.
Mm-hmm. What was this Bainbridge like?
Rather fine-looking chap. Rising 60, I think. I got the impression he was a fellow who was used to having authority, rather truculent.
How far has the chase gone?
Well, we hadn't much to go on. The departure was sudden and, of course, unknown to my men. It was the day after Vincent and I had interviewed him. We traced him to Liverpool Street Station, but we got no further than that.
No photographs in the house?
No, none.
Well, if you can catch him, we've got the complete legal staff to put him on the gibbet right here in this club. Everybody in the hanging game but the public executioner. I think we'd better have another drink before we eat what. Oh, Judge, this is Colonel Archer. He's trying to drum up some business for you.
How do you do?
How do you do?
I am, as you see, in the inevitable bewilderment of trying to find a train in the timetable. Never a happy experience.
I believe we've met before.
Really? I don't remember.
Oh,
of course, yes. It was at Moxton. You're in the police, are you not? You came to see me about the disappearance of this poor vagrant. His name...
Teal.
Ah, yes, yes, Teal. Rather an unfortunate turn to the case, I see. I can understand the Colonel's confusion, Sidney, for he met me at my Norfolk house under the name of Bainbridge, a name which I used to ensure privacy during my leisure time.
Good God.
May I complete Sir George's introduction, Colonel? I'm Sir Francis Britton, one of His Majesty's High Court judges.
I'm glad you've admitted your identity as Frederick Bainbridge. Sir Francis, well, this is very unpleasant for me, but I must ask you to accompany me to Scotland Yard for questioning.
On what matter, Colonel?
On the matter of the death of John Teal.
I believe I've given you all the information I can on that matter, Colonel Archer.
Circumstances have altered since I last saw you. We now know the man is dead.
Do you intend to charge me with homicide?
That will depend on your answers to certain questions.
Of course, I realize my position is an equivocal one. One pays dearly for the privilege of privacy, doesn't one? But at this stage, I prefer to say nothing. May I consult my solicitor, Sir Ronald Pond, who is now in the dining room?
Certainly.
Perhaps Colonel Archer would like to keep me in sight. Would you be kind enough to fetch Pond from the dining room, Sidney?
Oh, very well.
Oh, Pond, can you come in here?
This must embarrass you considerably, Colonel. It's unfortunate that we continue to meet under such tiresome circumstances.
Well, what is it? Did you want me?
Pond, I apologize for disturbing you at lunch. This gentleman is Colonel Archer, who is chief of the Norfolk Constabulary.
How do you do?
How do you do?
He wishes to question me in the matter of the death of one John Teal.
What?
Oh, my dear Pond, please curb your amazement. I quite share it. I'd like to talk to you privately, perhaps in the guest room. I'm sure Sir Ronald will be responsible for my return, Colonel. Come along, Pond.
But what on earth is all this about, Francis?
Well, I'm damned. I always knew that old goat was a wrong one. Well, you know your law and police standards, aren't you? You've got enough on him to charge him?
About as clear a case as could be for the murder of John Teal.
That from you is convincing.
I wonder what's being concocted in the guest room.
Pond's about the most slippery lawyer in this country.
Excuse me, Sir George. Colonel Archer is wanted on the phone. Inspector Vincent. I put him through here.
Oh, thank you, Roberts. I'll take it there, Archer.
Thank you. Hello. Colonel Archer here. Yes, Vincent? Yes. Yes, I see. Definitely not hot. I see, yes. Well, stay there, Vincent. I'll phone you in a few minutes. Vincent, at Scotland Yard, the post-mortem shows that Teal died of cyanide poisoning.
That's complete, I should say.
Yes, complete.
I'll lay you 5-1 you can't hold Britain.
I wouldn't like that.
I'm certain that Pond is at this moment telephoning to the Home Office to get this thing hushed up. That pusillanimous ass Gilbert West is having the bee put on him, as sure as God made little apples.
Sidney, I was brought up on the dogma that the law is no respecter of persons. I know it doesn't always work that way, but it has wherever I've had any authority.
The idea of a damned high court judge getting away with a murder for which a lesser man would hang doesn't appeal to me. But if the powers that be want it, a thick cloud can come down from above and cover up this pretty dirty affair. I wouldn't like that. Not one little bit.
There's another call for Colonel Archer, sir.
Thank you, Roberts.
Thank you. Colonel Archer here. Yes, Commissioner? What? Do nothing? Well, this is my case, and I'm going ahead. Well, I'm damned. You had the post-mortem report. Very good, General, but I do this under protest. The Home Secretary has instructed the police to do nothing in the matter of Britain's arrest until further investigations can be carried out. On no account is he to be taken to Scotland Yard.
Well, Pond worked fast, and the Home Secretary played true to form. Archer, would you like to see their game spoiled without prejudice to your position?
Indeed I would.
There's a way it can be done. Will you excuse me while I make a phone call?
Certainly.
And as it's going to Lord Bradenham of the Daily Globe, I think I'd better make it from outside. Too many damn lawyers here, what? I'll see you at the Garrick in half an hour.
Right. For a policeman's taste, there are always too many lawyers. Anywhere.
Oh, Colonel Archer.
Ah, hello, Pond.
I think, if you've not already had them, you will shortly receive instructions from Scotland Yard regarding your conduct of the Teal matter.
I know, Pond. I've been instructed to drop our investigations in the Teal case as far as Frederick Bainbridge is concerned.
I need hardly say that I can't imagine what odd combination of circumstances has led you to follow your strange course, Colonel. I told you at our last meeting all I knew of the man Teal and his disappearance. Of course, I sympathize with you in your disappointment. But I have an idea that you will not find the case of poor Teal as triumphantly simple as you had supposed.
Probably not, sir. I won't apologize to you for I've acted in good faith. Not a quality which my profession meets with too often. Good afternoon.
Damned impudence. I'm not in the habit of accepting remarks like that from confounded police officials. I have a good mind.
I think you had best remain quiet about this, Francis. We've dodged a rather ugly situation rather neatly, I think.
Damnation, Pond, what do you mean? You talk as if there was a case against
you. Now, steady, Francis. I realize that you're innocent in this affair, but granted that you are Bainbridge, there is a case against you. How strong, we don't know. Now, West will be here in a couple of minutes from the Home Office. Before he comes, I must be clear about one thing. When the report came out that the body had been found, why didn't you go to the police? You knew about it from our conversation before lunch. Such an action would have made your position quite secure.
Well, I'd already told Archer all I knew, and I was certain that my identity as Bainbridge could not be traced to me as Britain. I couldn't have foreseen this confounded encounter with Archer.
Yes, I see. Where were you after you left Moxton?
At home in London. Oh, it may have been an error of judgment to leave, but such mistakes aren't of necessity evidence of guilt.
They have sometimes been so interpreted from the bench, Francis.
Confound it, Pond. I'm not on trial.
We'll try to see to it that you won't be.
Tell me, Pond, how far is West prepared to go in withholding the police from further action against me?
I don't know. As I told you, his instant reaction was to stop immediate investigation. Of course, he knew nothing of the police case when I spoke to him.
Nor do we. Pond, I've made two grave mistakes. To leave Moxton was a blunder. But when I did so, the matter was merely an unexplained disappearance of a vagrant. And you can see that police curiosity would perhaps have exposed this double life of mine.
Innocent as it was.
Exactly. But my second mistake was worse. When Archer recognized me here, before I sent for you, he asked me to go with him to Scotland Yard for questioning. And I asked him then if he were charging me with the homicide of Teal.
I see. That was unfortunate. But it's inadmissible, for you'd not been charged or warned.
Quite, but I don't like it. Mine was a natural question. You and I had been discussing the case, you remember. And the circumstances seemed
I shouldn't worry about that. You said that Archer had talked to you some days after the man had disappeared. What had you told him then? Oh,
merely a brief account of Teal's visit to me. That he was a man who'd done me a service some years ago and that I'd helped him financially in small ways several times. I described him as extremely overwrought at the time and I think I mentioned the possibility of suicide being in his mind.
You're sure you said that?
Yes, I'm fairly certain that I said that. Of course, I knew nothing of the circumstances of his life and said that to Archer, too.
But you made the suggestion that the man might be dead.
Yes, I did.
I see.
Good morning, Britton. Pond?
West.
Yes, all
right. I'm glad you both waited here. I didn't want you to come to the Home Office, Britton, in the circumstances. What a damn ridiculous situation this is. I've talked to General Fellows of the CID since you rang me, Pond. I may say he's as embarrassed as I am. Well, fortunately, only one or two Scotland Yard people, and Archer, of course, know of your identity as Bainbridge, Britton. In view of all the circumstances, I think I can say the case will not be pressed at this time.
You're holding off, Major?
Yes. There's no question that the police have a sort of case against you, Bainbridge.
I don't like that, West.
What is the case, Major?
Well, the main points are that the man died of cyanide poisoning.
What's that, poison?
The Home Office analysis report came in this morning. And some letters were found on the body.
What letters? But they couldn't have
been. Yes, a packet of letters were found sewn up in the man's coat, which, if genuine, could point to a blackmail attempt against Bainbridge. That implies a possible motive on the part of Bainbridge to get rid of the fellow.
That's not the whole case, of course.
No, there are other cumulative facts.
Not a strong case, I'd say.
Huh? Well, no, it would seem not. After all, the case may turn out to be a suicide, and the letters may be forgeries. In which case, it would be appalling to subject the judge to the humiliation of clearing himself.
And what of the inquest?
On no account must you appear. Yes, I'm quite certain we're doing the right thing. I see no reason on God's earth to drag you through the mud of defending yourself. And the scandal to the bench must be avoided.
Right.
I say, excuse me, you fellows. Have you seen this in the Globe Stop Press?
What is it, Lamprey?
The missing man Bainbridge in the body in the well case has been identified as Sir Francis Britton, the High Court judge.
Good God.
In the name of heaven, how did they get hold of that?
There must have been some leakage.
It's Sidney's doing. He was here when Archer recognized me.
Sidney gave this to the press? Well, what a dastardly thing. But what is Bradenham about to print it? Why the blazes can't these press fellows mind their own business? It takes the matter right out of my hands. I'm sorry, Britton. I'm deeply sorry. I would have done anything in my power.
You mean the case is open?
I'm afraid with this publicity there'll be no holding the police.
But surely, Major.
I'm sorry, but there it is.
But it's impossible.
Pond, please. You seem to forget. I have faith in the law. I put my trust in the law of England.
Hanging judge on murder charge.
Thank you, sir.
Hanging judge on murder charge.
I need not remind the counsel of your experience, Mr. Nottingham, that members of the jury will be greatly assisted in their task if you confine your questions to what is relevant.
I thank your lordship. I shall endeavor to be concise.
Sir Francis, you admit authorship of the letters addressed to Mabel Teele, which the court has heard read?
I admit it.
Do you not consider them to be a particularly blackguardly piece of work?
I express no opinion.
Then we'll leave that to the jury to decide. You were known at Moxton as Mr. Frederick Bainbridge.
Yes.
As far as your life there was concerned, you took great pains to conceal your true identity.
That is so.
Why did you do this?
As a person whose name was fairly well known to the public, I wished to evade public interest, and particularly the attention of neighbors who, if they knew who I was, might intrude on the privacy which was the object of my retreat.
The object was not to lead a loose sort of life, which, if you were known to be one of His Majesty's judges, would result in a nationwide scandal and possibly very unpleasant consequences to yourself.
Oh, really, my lord, I must protest against my vantage friend's question.
Is it necessary for my friend to indulge in these gratuitous interruptions, my lord?
I find the question quite admissible, Mr. Lamprey.
I submit to your lordship, of course.
Do you wish me to repeat the question, Sir Francis?
The suggestion is insulting and entirely untrue.
The object was simply to avoid the annoying publicity that inevitably follows a prominent man.
Yes.
You were known to Mabel Teele as Frederick Bainbridge, were you not?
Yes.
Would you describe yourself as a prominent man at that stage in your career?
Hardly.
What then was the object of your alias at that time?
The motive was fundamentally the same. I wish to keep my public and private life in separate compartments. I adopted the name of Frederick Bainbridge for my private life.
For a private life which would not bear a close scrutiny.
I would do not admit that.
Is it not true that you have periodically been leading a Jekyll and Hyde existence, the Hyde being represented by Mr. Frederick Bainbridge?
I do not admit that.
Have you ever done any amateur photography, Sir Francis?
No.
Or gold or silver electroplating?
No.
You are aware that in these processes and in photography, potassium cyanide is employed.
I have heard so.
You had no legitimate reason for having a supply of cyanide in your house?
No reason at all.
Yet cyanide crystals were found on the rug in your living room.
So we have been told.
Are you suggesting that Inspector Vincent is a perjurer?
I make no suggestion. I only say that, to the best of my knowledge, there was no potassium cyanide in the house while I was living there.
Turning now to the events on the night of Teele's death. Is it true that just before Teele's arrival at the house, you told the witness, Mary Reddish, that you were suffering from a migraine?
That is so.
And that in her presence you emptied into a glass of brandy what the witness described as a whitish powder contained in a paper packet.
I did.
What was that powder, Sir Francis?
It was a headache powder.
You were in the habit of using these powders to relieve migraine?
I've used them for many years.
How do you account for the fact that in your medicine chest there were found no powders answering to this description?
Quite simply, the powder in question was the last one. There were none left.
Quite so. The powder in question was the only one?
The last one.
While you were emptying the powder into the glass of brandy, is it true that Mary Reddish called your attention to the fact that some of the powder was spilling onto the rug?
Possibly. I have no recollection of it.
You agree it is possible that you did spill a quantity of this powder on the rug?
Of course it is possible. I just don't remember doing so.
And you cannot account for the presence on the rug of cyanide crystals?
I've already said that I cannot.
I put it to you, Sir Francis, that you can account for it. That the so-called headache powder was in fact a quantity of potassium cyanide. That you used it to prepare a fatal drink which you gave to your visitor.
I did no such thing.
That he collapsed almost immediately and that you dragged his body out into the garden and flung it into the well.
Untrue and absurd. The whole suggestion is fantastic.
Earlier in cross-examination, you denied that you were expecting Teele to visit you at Moxton.
Yes.
Subsequently, the jury heard William Roberts testify that 3 days before Teele met his death, he, Roberts, overheard part of an interview which took place at the Adelphi Club in London between yourself and a man calling himself by the name of Teele. I put it to you that you concealed this interview from the jury because you wished them to believe that the Moxton meeting was not prearranged and that, therefore, you did not have the opportunity of planning to take Teele's life.
I did not take his life.
Why did you curtail your holiday, Sir Francis?
To avoid questions rising out of Teele's disappearance that might lead to a disclosure of my identity.
You realized, did you not, that the body would inevitably be found sooner or later, that Mr. Bainbridge would then come under suspicion, and that it was necessary for Sir Francis to make a clean break from his alias while there was yet time.
There was no question of suspicion.
Allowing only a decent interval to elapse after Teele's disappearance so that you should not be immediately associated with it.
That, to an extent, is true. Though, as I've already told you, the motive was not the one that you impute to me.
You heard, no doubt, Colonel Archer testify to your having given him a very different account of the relationship between yourself and John Teele.
His evidence is true on that point. My account was a false one, given for the obvious reason that I did not wish to reveal my connection with Teele.
You repeated that account at the inquest on Teele?
I did.
You perjured yourself?
Yes.
That is the case for the Crown, my lord.
You wish to re-examine Mr. Lamprey?
No, thank you, my lord.
I hardly think that was the time remaining to us. I shall therefore adjourn until tomorrow.
Oh, good Lord, Pond, I'm tired. Thank God the Crown is finished.
What would you think Britain has on his mind to send for us?
We'll know soon enough. Here he is.
Owen.
Good evening.
Evening, Sir Crown. Evening, Francis.
Well, Francis, that's all they have to say, and I don't think we've done too badly.
No, by Jove, no. A lot of circumstantial stuff and a mountain of improbability. I think you've had the worst of it.
Don't lie to me, Lamprey. It's an appallingly strong case against me, and the turns have not been in my favor.
Sit down, Francis.
It's your time to dine, isn't it? I'm sorry to disturb you like this.
Quite all right.
Everything has gone soundly against me. And the Crown will grind me to pieces with those letters.
Then why didn't you let us cite them? We had a handwriting expert.
Because the truth is that I did write them.
I doubt if Parkinson will let him go too far on that tack. Parkinson is on our side.
Parkinson is a good judge, and he will allow the Crown to use the letters to the full. I would. No. My only defense must be the truth. Now remember that, Lamprey. Teal committed suicide.
Yes. Yes, that's a defense theory, but hypothetical solution.
It is not hypothetical. No, it is not. Teal did not leave the house alive. I saw him die.
You what? You don't know what you're saying.
He had two seizures. Attacks of violent pain. During the first, he took a tablet or a capsule from his left-hand pocket, which seemed to relieve him. He explained that he suffered from angina pectoris. A second seizure came, more severe. He was helpless. He asked me to administer another capsule. I did so. He made me take it from his right-hand pocket and place it in his mouth. He planned it all. That was the poison. He snatched the brandy and drank it. He was dead in a few moments.
Good God.
Why haven't you told us this? You told us that he walked out of your house quietly.
I know I did. I told that to the police, and I so testified at the inquest. I perjured myself again.
But, good God, where are we now? What happened after he died?
I thought what to do for a long time. First, I wanted to phone the police, but I thought. I didn't do that. I examined the body, made sure he was dead, and then I took the letters he had shown me and burned them. And then, long afterwards, I dragged the body out to the well and dropped it in.
You didn't find the wallet with the letters?
No, I thought those I read and destroyed were the real and the only ones that he had.
Why didn't you tell the police?
Yes, great heaven, why didn't you?
Why didn't I? Can't you see? I can. You think it's incredible that a man such as I, Britain, a judge, should have done this mad thing? I've persuaded juries to send men to the gallows for such acts. Brutish and deliberate, I've called it. It is difficult to believe that an innocent man could have disposed of the girl's body in such a callous, brutish way. Yes. He was a young man. The jury believed me. They always did. I could have told them what panic does to men. I knew what it does. Panic made me write a letter once to urge a girl to have an abortion. You heard it read in court. Panic isn't a sudden horror. Not always. It can be a creeping,
I wrote that letter over and over again. I watched Teal's body most of the night. I dropped it in the well at 4 a.m. Sometimes I had the telephone receiver in my hand. But gradually, it became too late to telephone. Oh, you may not believe or understand me. Fear gave place to reason. I was Frederick Bainbridge as I stared at that body. It was Bainbridge who was in danger, not Britain. Slowly, I reasoned that if I told the police, it would be certain that Britain would be involved. Whatever mistakes I made as Bainbridge, I could still flee to the safety of my own name. That is why I followed the course of the chief killer. I believed it.
But why did you remain there at Marksman for 10 days long?
The longer I could delay direct suspicion of Bainbridge, the better. But after Archer's visit, I thought it best for Bainbridge to vanish.
Francis, you must know that this revelation throws our whole defense out the window.
It's the truth. Now it's only the truth.
What in God's name is my course now?
You know this means your humiliation and professional ruin, Francis.
I've already accepted both in full measure. I've abandoned my career and my honor. I'm fighting now only to save my neck.
I'm quite aware, sir. So is Pond, of the gravity of this case. But I can't fight it when the ground is blown from under my feet. I would like to know why you waited until this moment to tell us of this fact.
How many times I've asked that question. Asked it of a quivering wretch like myself. It's a stupid question and unanswerable.
Francis, can't...
why do you tell us this now? Coming at this point, you know it must go against you. Why don't you let...
My only hope is to prove that Teal died by his own intention and I saw him die.
Pond, I don't know what to do. I have to admit perjury, and I have an admission that Britton saw him die. Not only that, he saw Teal drink the brandy with the powder. And the Crown has made a mighty play to suggest the powder was cyanide. But now I have to admit that he administered a capsule just before death.
But I didn't know what the capsule was. And what I say now is the truth. I don't believe the truth can ever convict an innocent man in this country under the law of England.
Hello, Nottingham.
Oh, there you are. I've waited for you over an hour, Sydney. I don't know what you want with me, but I hope it's not some of your back door nonsense.
By no means, old chap. I'm deadly serious. That's only natural. I've seen 4 days of this trial.
Well, I hope you've enjoyed yourself. I haven't.
It's the wrong side of the fence for you, the Crown, isn't it? Queer experience yesterday watching you flatten Britain. A pitiable object he was.
Sydney, what is the reason for this meeting?
To put to you a leading question, old boy. Is it possible that Britain's latest fantasy disturbed you as it did me and perhaps old Parkinson?
You mean, do I believe Britain's new story of the suicide, seeing Teal die?
You think I used the right word? Fantasy?
The right word? Yes, of course I don't believe it.
Well, I can't forget Britain yesterday and that preposterous story, which I, for one, believe.
Good God. You believed Britain?
I did. What guilty man could make up that fairy tale? I put the capsule in his mouth. That was the poison I did not know. Those were his words, Nottingham, and he had to admit perjury to say them. Perjury. The lawyer's mortal sin.
But he had motive, adequate motive, and opportunity.
There's no adequate motive for murder, Nottingham. I've heard that from you. Yes, I believed him. He stuck to it while you ground him to pieces. I'm not asking you what you thought. Perhaps I know, but...
Damnation, Sydney. No man like Britton would be a panic-stricken fool.
Quoting Mr. Justice Britton makes you feel more secure, old boy. Uneasy lies the head that's for the crown, eh? Nottingham, if you found that one of your witnesses knew something vital to the case, which had not yet come out in evidence, what would you do?
Recall him tomorrow and produce the testimony.
Regardless of the fact that what comes out might work for the defense?
I'm an officer of the court. I can withhold nothing, no matter what the result.
If you hadn't said that, I'd have gone to Parkinson. But I knew you would. Lamprey and Pond would run away from it. I know how the cyanide crystals got on the rug.
What? How?
Wait a minute.
Mary? Tell him, will you?
Mary? Who is it?
Mary Reddish.
You're mad, Sidney, tampering with a witness. What does she know?
Yes, sir.
And now, Mary, I want you to answer the questions I ask you, just as you did when we met at Moxton. Trust me, you do, don't you?
Yes, sir.
Right, now, tell Mr. Nottingham what you told me. How did the cyanide crystals get on the rug?
They spilled when I was cleaning the mug.
What mug?
The big silver mug which Freddie... Sir Francis asked me to clean while he was away.
What did you clean it with?
Some stuff in a bottle that I got from Mr. Murchison, the jeweler.
And what did he tell you about it?
He said it'll shine horseshoes, but don't give it to the cat.
And what did he say was in the bottle when you went back yesterday and asked him?
He said it was a solution of 1 in 8 cyanide of...
Potassium?
Yes, sir.
Did you tell him why you wanted the cleaner?
Yes, to clean the silver mug.
And who it was for?
I said it was for me.
Why?
Because, well, they don't like it. Me being with Mr. Bainbridge.
What did you do with the bottle afterwards?
It was empty and I threw it on the rubbish heap.
Oh, you're a witness, Nottingham.
But why didn't you tell this to us before?
I didn't know what was in the bottle. I didn't think it was important. Then I got to thinking and I remembered about the cat. Oh, sir, this might be bad for him. Everything I've said so far has been bad for him.
Now, Miss Reddish, you may have saved Sir Francis. You've certainly done him no harm. Now go along and wait in my car. Go along, there's a good girl.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
I've got a job to do, Sidney, and I'm out for a conviction.
So speaks a lawyer with a heart.
Would cyanide in solution leave traces when it evaporated a month or so later?
Too bad for the car, Nottingham, it would. I'm not a director of United Chemicals for nothing. I got our chief analyst to tell me that it would, and there's evidence that the solution was used on the cup.
Good God, it may get him off. But it could mean proof of possession of the poison. If the jury believe her, then Britain's acquitted. But if they don't, and she's about as tarnished as the mug you talk about, then Britain will hang, and perhaps she will too. I can only bring out her story in direct examination. Lamprey will leave her alone, of course, and that evidence is better for Britain coming from the prosecution, you clever swine. I'll call this jeweler. What's his name?
Murchison. He's in my car, too. If I'd been in Moxton much longer, I'd have needed a bus. Damn lawyers can't find your own evidence.
I have read to you from my notes the testimony as to the date of purchase of the fluid by the witness Reddish. Members of the jury, in your deliberations, you have arrived at a point of perplexity among yourselves. It is understandable, yes, quite understandable, in view of the additional testimony of this witness. I direct you to place no importance whatsoever upon the recalling of Reddish by the prosecution rather than by the defense. I remind you that under English law, the prosecution is mindful that all facts shall be presented to the jury, not only the facts that are adverse to the defense. That will clear for you the confusion caused by the late admission of this testimony. As to its value, I do most earnestly direct you that if you believe this witness, Mary Reddish, there can be reasonable doubt, I repeat, reasonable doubt, as to the guilt of the accused. Now you will again retire and consider your verdict.
Our job, Bowman, and it's a hard one, is to decide on the facts we've been given if we think the prisoner is guilty or not.
But the judge said beyond reasonable doubt, and that's what I have.
a reasonable doubt.
Well, we've made up our minds, 11 of us, all but you.
The judge believes Mary Reddish.
It's our verdict we're handing in, not the judge's. How can you believe the word of a girl like that?
If you don't go along with us, all this trial goes for nothing.
You can't hold out any longer, Bowman. We've been at it over 3 hours now.
But if I agree with all of you, then we are hanging him. And I'm not sure.
How long are we going to wait to do our duty? Every fact's against this man. I don't care what the judge says.
Britain's had plenty of poor blokes in the dock himself and never turned a hair.
11 of us believe in a guilty verdict in spite of the judge.
You all hate Britain, that's why.
That's not true.
Of course not. The man's had a fair trial and the facts are against him.
Hello? Yes? It's just striking midnight. I'm at the Adelphic Club and I'm leaving for Norwich now. I'll be at the jail 2 hours before the time, about 7. No, nothing. I'm quite certain there won't be a stay. I was at the Home Office just an hour ago. Huh? Oh, has he? Yes, I understand. Very good, Condon. I'll see you at 7. Britton has just asked to see the governor again.
Well, you're off now, eh?
Yes, I suppose so, Sidney. I'd rather drive tonight than try to sleep. Seemed on the point of rain when I came in here just now. A dreary drive out of town at the best of times, but... Well, in spite of your hospitality, Sidney, I'm not exactly at ease in this place. Good God, we got what we were after.
Speak for yourself.
I'm only a policeman. That's a simple job, but not a pleasant one now. 9 hours to go. Poor devil. Pond and Lamprey will probably be along in a minute. They won't have accomplished much for the Home Secretary.
Oh, I thought you'd gone home, Nottingham.
I've been up in the library. Evening, Archer.
Evening. I just called in to see Sidney.
It's nicer to meet you here than Norwich.
Oh, Lord, I ought to go to bed, but even this hole is preferable.
I suppose they'll give him sedatives or something to see him through.
Oh, yes. The governor was with him 2 hours ago, Nottingham. He's about the same.
Have you seen him?
Yes, this morning. Condon took me to have a look at him. Confidentially, the Home Office wanted some sort of layman's opinion about his condition. Pond's been trying to stay on mental grounds. A couple of alienists have seen him.
What is his condition?
Nothing to stop us going ahead.
Yes, Nottingham, you wanted a conviction and you got it. And you made it stick.
Oh, damn you, Sidney, I've had enough of your knight in armor.
Your words, old man, delivered right here. Here comes the defense. What has the defense accomplished, Lamprey, apart from failing to impress 12 of the usual clods?
There's nothing on God's green earth that we or you can do now, and we may as well admit it.
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. And the end is only hours away.
Oh, Mr. Lamprey, your clerk is waiting for you in the guest room. He's been there since 8 o'clock.
Thank you, Roberts. I'll see him. Well, my conscience is clear. I've done everything I could.
I think we can both rest easy on that score.
Oh, hell take you and your damn consciences! What lawyer ever had one?
I'm sorry to intrude, Mr. Lamprey, but I've been waiting for you some time, and I believe this letter may be of importance.
Quite right, Hudson.
It was delivered to your chambers about 6 o'clock. An old woman brought it, said it had to be delivered to you tonight, and I believed her. She was quite willing to give me her address.
Thank you, Hudson. Now, do you mind waiting in the guest room?
Yes, sir. I apologize for intruding, gentlemen.
Britain's being a judge has been against him all along. Any bricklayer or butcher would have had a better chance.
Britain's being damned unpopular has fixed him. Well, there's no petition to worry about this time. Let's face it, if we got a reprieve from him, there would have been an outcry. And I'm the fellow who believed he was innocent when the chips were down, which is probably more than you birds can say.
Sidney, that's below the belt. All I know is we did our best for our client. A jury thought Britain murdered Teal. 3 judges of appeal thought he was fairly tried. And the public thought so, too. As for me, I don't know. He's to be hanged at 9 o'clock. As I thought, another crank letter. I've had dozens of them.
Threatening you if you got Britain off, I imagine.
Yes, most of them. Oh, but this one is for the defense. Listen to this. The defense counsel of Sir Francis Britton, whoever you may be, you will be right in your defense. The suicide theory is correct.
Fine time for encouragement.
But as you won't believe in it yourself, you will fail. Britton will panic.
For God's sake, tear the damn thing up.
No, no, go on.
Lies are easy at first, and bodies can be hidden. And Britton will only tell the truth when it is too late, and even the truth becomes a lie. The truth that John Teal swallowed poison before Britton's eyes.
My God, don't waste time with that gibberish.
Give it to me. Oh, I agree with you, Pond. If we listened to every damn crank who wanted to interfere...
That letter didn't sound like a crank.
Archer, come here. Finish this letter. You notice the signature? I'm going to telephone.
John Teal.
Good God.
That letter's before the fact. This envelope's been through the post. It's marked August the 3rd, Moxon.
Not so fast. It's probably a fake. How can we verify it?
There's enough for a stay.
Of course there is.
Yes. Good God. He has a set of fingerprints inside. And a postscript. My fingerprints are to be found in the files of the Harden Mental Home in Lancashire under the name of John Leet.
Hello, Trunks.
Who are you calling?
Get me Norwich Jail. This is a police emergency.
We should ring the Home Office.
Hell take the Home Office. I'm saving him from a night's agony. No, I tell you, clear this line.
The Home Secretary is the only person who can stop this.
Hello. Is that Norwich Jail? I'm Sir George Sidney. I want to speak to the Governor. Tell him it's urgent. Oh, I get him.
If this is a fake, Sidney, it's the cruelest thing you can do.
Of course it's not a fake. And I'm the one who nearly put him on the gibbet. My God.
Teal thought of everything. If Britton was convicted, this letter was not to be delivered until the eve of the execution. It's the most fiendish thing I've ever seen.
Hello? Are you the Governor? Oh, just a minute. I'll put Colonel Archer on.
Hello? Condon? This is Archer. We've just received a letter which I believe genuine and which proves Britton's innocence. Yes, I know it's a matter for the Home Secretary. We're getting him, but whatever happens, hold off. What? You can't mean it.
What is it?
What? Britton has just signed a confession.
What?
Well, hold off till you hear from the Home Office.
The prisoner Britton, sir.
Oh, come in, Sir Francis. All right, Blake, and close the door. Sit down, Sir Francis.
Britton, your torture's over.
Wait, Sidney.
Why has there been a stay, sir? Why have you sent for me? You have my confession. There was only one reason to leave my cell. That was to be the end. That time was yesterday.
We have good news for you.
This case is closed. Just the end remains. The law does not torture. There should be no delay.
Don't you see your friends, your solicitor and Sir George Sidney have come to tell you themselves?
Francis, a wrong has been righted. You're free.
No. It must be finished. I have had judgment.
Francis, you don't seem to understand. A letter was delivered to us yesterday, in time, thank God, written by the dead man, Teal, in which he states his intention of killing himself in your presence.
Your pardon, Britton. A free pardon. No. Pardon. I can't bear that. That means the law was wrong.
Great God, you must believe us.
I do believe you. That is my horror.
It was suicide, just as you said, Britton. He didn't want to kill you. He wanted to torture you up to the moment of death. He was a callous, ruthless, cruel fiend.
He was my son. And he has won. He planned it. That I should betray everything I believed, by panic, lies, treachery, be fairly tried, rightly condemned, and yet live on. I signed my confession, one final lie. That would have been my secret. It would have set the pattern right. But and now, I am condemned to live. And my living makes a mockery of the faith I held.
An innocent man's been saved from the gallows. Isn't that justice?
Better an innocent
man should die than that a law be made a fake. I wish that I were dead.
May I go, sir, please?
That was Hanging Judge, a play by Raymond Massey, based on a novel by Bruce Hamilton, adapted for broadcasting by John Richmond. Sir Francis Bitton was played by Boris Karloff. Sir George Sidney by Hugh Manning. Keith Nottingham by Duncan McIntyre. Miles Lamprey by Harrison Culph. Sir Ronald Pond by Robert Webber. Colonel George Archer by Richard Williams. Major Gilbert West by Norman Claridge. John Teal by T. St. John Barry. Mary Reddish by Gabriel Blunt. Roberts by Richard Hutton. Other parts were played by Geoffrey Bond, John Casaubon, Brian Hayes, Peter Hoare, Arthur Lawrence, Stanley McKenzie, and Tony Quinn. The recorded production was by Cleland Finn.